Om Shri Sai Ram, dear listeners. Welcome to another beautiful segment of Afternoon Satsang. As always, I am Arvind from Team Radio Sai, being joined by Prem from Team Radio Sai. Of course, needless to say, along with Swami, who is ever present in our studios at Radio Sai Global Harmony. And this week, we are going to continue with the topic that we started last week. Something related to a master's touch. The speciality of a master vis-a-vis a normal human being. Swami has his own way of doing things. And when he does his things in his inimitable style, in his inimitable ways, at the end of it, we are always left spellbound in awe, wonder, thrill and thrall. And that is because the way a master does things is so different from the way any of us human beings would ever do these things. And that is the speciality of a master. Last week, Prem and myself started an impossible task of trying to recount the different ways in which a master's touch is different from a normal human's touch. There is no end to the number of points that can be, you know, stated with this regard, and yet we delved into it simply because of the sheer joy it gives us when we delve into it. We had traced through 5-6 different points, and this week, inspired and egged on by the wonderful response that we have received from all our listeners, we wish to continue on this same topic. And so, offering this whole segment right in the beginning at the lotus feet of Swami, with gratitude for giving us this joy of discussing his leelas and mahimas to our heart's content. Sai Ram Prem, and I think we should continue forward where we were speaking last week about how a good master teaches us not the right answers, but teaches us to ask the right questions.
Absolutely. Sai Ram Arvind and Sai Ram to all listeners. You know, even as I recap whatever we spoke last time and the kind of things which we stated, and the approach that the master usually takes, one word which kind of hits me is the approach of the master is always filled with this theme or this emotion. It's balance. You know, because he knows exactly how much to push and how much to support. He knows how much to be strict and how much to be sympathetic or empathetic. It's always in that perfect balance, and I think because what he's trying to teach us is balance, right? Because in life is all about balance. Push as much as you should push and refrain as much as you should. And that balance is what he teaches. And that is what even the last point which we mentioned, that the questions which you ask are more important. And a kind of corollary of that is, the master's approach always depends on the person who is asking the question or the person who is being guided. Not about any general dogma or general a tradition or anything like that.
There's nothing like a one solution fits all.
Absolutely. It is absolutely custom made for the person who is asking the question or who is making the query. And you could also say that that is one of the reasons why Swami's instructions always changed from time to time for different people, for the same person on different occasions.
Oh, you have covered all the bases there. I remember in one discourse, you know, Swami was saying that when a patient goes to a doctor with a stomachache, to one patient the doctor says, you know, reduce your food intake. To another person the doctor, you know, gives an antacid. To the third person the doctor says, you have to increase your food intake, you have not had anything. To a fourth person the doctor says, you need an operation immediately, because it's appendicitis. And Swami would continue to say that it is not right for an observer to think that the doctor is off his head. He is suggesting different remedies for the same problem. Swami says that it is at that time that you must have faith in the doctor's wisdom and judgment. The doctor knows that one is a stomach pain caused due to lack of food, one is stomach pain caused due to overeating, one is stomach pain caused due to indigestion, another is a stomach pain caused due to the appendicitis infection. So, in the same way, you know, when we come across different situations in life, and when it comes to Swami, it would be foolish on our part to think that Swami told this person that, and Swami is telling me this. Why is it different? Why is Swami treating differentially? We should realize that he is the divine doctor dispensing the perfect medicine, the perfect wisdom as our situation requires. And that is why, you know, as you beautifully put it, different people with the same problem receive different solutions. And the same person also with the same problem in different points in time receives different solution. Beautifully put.
Just stretching the doctor analogy which you gave, Swami has also said, would you go to the doctor who gives the same medicine for all ailments?
Oh, yes.
It's again, you know, that's one of the ways we judge a doctor, right? If you go with every problem and he gives you the same tablets.
I remember in school, we used to often joke about this doctor. We used to tell, don't go to him. After all, he's going to give you a paracetamol and a painkiller. And we would say that, why do you need to go to the doctor? We ourselves can dispense that medicine. We feel that if 10 out of 10 patients have received the same medicine, the doctor has not done his studies right.
You know, just talking about this thing, and another extension of this particular thought is that, you know, the master always keeps raising the bar. He never lets you sit and, you know, rest on your laurels, as I said. He's always raising the bar, and that is why sometimes you feel that, you know, how much ever you do, it's not enough for Swami. That's a kind of a emotion that many of us have gone through. What's the point? How much ever you try, it's not enough for Swami. However good you are, it's not enough for Swami. I remember when we, when Miss Suma of the Anantapur campus, one of our lecturers there, you know, she in her talk narrated this incident. And she would say that very often we've seen Swami giving tips to control anger. You know, Swami would say, drink a glass of water, look at your face in the mirror, or use that energy for something good, go and do something, do some gardening work or something like that. So she had taken that instruction very close to her heart, and she would do something. She was given to a lot of anger.
When you say this, I'm reminded, because, you know, this is a weakness that I constantly suffered from. I possibly suffer from it even today. You know, it is so, I don't know, maybe it's past vasanas, what it is, but this anger is something that flares up. And a lot of effort has been going on from my side to bring this down. But I remember way back, you know, as maybe it was, I think the year 2000, when after our 12th standard, Swami had called us all in for an interview, and this was haunting me even then. How do I control my anger? Why do I get so angry? And I asked this to Swami. And Swami had given three solutions. Because you said it, I just remembered. Swami said three things you do. You know, first thing Swami said was, as soon as you get angry, go and look at yourself in the mirror. He says, when you get angry, your face contorts and distorts so badly that when you look at yourself in the mirror, you yourself will get a kind of disgust at this anger which is making you so ugly. And then he said, if that doesn't work, go to the bathroom, put on the tap, hear to the pitch at which the water is falling, and in that pitch try to sing a bhajan. And I was just thinking, it is so difficult to do that when you are angry. Maybe that is the reason the anger dissipates and goes off. And the third thing Swami said was, if that also doesn't work, go down and run for 2 furlongs. He said, then you will be too tired to be angry. So this was a solution that he had told me when I had asked him what one should do to control anger.
You know, typically the first thing which Swami told you, look at yourself in the mirror, is again going back to the first point which we made about the Master's Raj, right? He uses our weakness and makes it our strength, you know, because all of us don't like to appear ugly or look unpleasant. So Swami is using that weakness actually to correct a flaw in us.
Using our vanity to help us control.
Wow. Right. Coming back to, you know, this is the same thing. The third tip which Swami gave you, just dissipate that energy which comes out of the temper. So this madam, you know, what she used to do is, she was not a person given to short temper. It was not that every now and then she would become very angry. But whenever she would get angry, she would remove herself from the rest of the people, go to the prayer hall in the campus, and mop it from one end to the other.
Oh, okay.
So she would think that she is dissipating the energy, and at the same time she is doing something which is
cleaning the house of God.
Yeah, something which is useful. So she thought this is a nice thing, and it was going on fine. And a few years down the line, Swami calls the family for an interview, her parents, and she was also there. And in the course of the interview, suddenly Swami looks at her mother and says, your daughter gets too angry. You know, she has a temper problem. And the mother was a little surprised, because according to the mother, that was not one of the serious problems that the daughter was facing. You know? Temper was not specifically the problem she had to handle. So she said, no, Swami, she's not so given to short temper. And she knows to control herself also. That's never been a problem with her ever since childhood. Swami said, what do you know? She has too much anger, and every time she gets angry, she mops the the prayer all from one end to the other.
Mm.
Okay, and first thing was nobody else knew this habit of hers, and here was Swami revealing it. And what hurt her was, see, Swami, I'm doing something which is good and which something which you have told us that we should do.
Something constructive.
Constructive. And why are you pointing it out as an error in me?
Hmm.
And then she went back and she was a little upset with Swami pointing it out like this. And then after she calmed down from that anger, I don't know whether she went and mopped the prayer all again. But when she calmed down, that's when she understood that yes, for that stage when you're getting angry, you don't know what to do with your temper. That was the instruction by Swami, saying that use that energy in a constructive manner. But actually what Swami wants us is that you should not get angry at all. So that is why even though you're doing something which Swami himself has told, that when that is not the ultimate, Swami will always push you to a level which is higher than that. And that is what Swami was showing his displeasure and saying that yes, you're doing something constructive with your anger, but why get angry at all?
Wow. You know, this incident reminds me of a question that I was asked 3 days back by a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying this. He was saying that in one point of time, Swami has given one instruction.
Okay.
And another point in time, Swami gives another instruction. And this might not be a personal instruction like Suma ma'am had, where she could ask and clarify from Swami. This might be a discourse. You are hearing one discourse, Swami says one thing. And in another discourse, I think we discussed this.
Mm-hmm.
Swami seems to contradict. So the question he was asking is, how do I know what should I take? You know, we explained the contradiction in the sense when Swami is giving a discourse, he's talking to people, he's talking to beings from the KG to PG. In every sense, you know. In the literal sense, in the spiritual sense, there are kindergarten children and there are research scholars in spirituality who are listening to him talk. And Swami's master lecture has to satisfy everyone. That is how Kasturi Garu describes Swami's discourses, as he writes that poem called Satya Sai Speaks,
right,
but who amongst us listens?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he writes that at the beginning of the Satya Sai Speaks volumes.
Right.
That Swami's masterful lecture enthralls everybody. Now just imagine how tough it is for the teacher in the class when she has to make sense to a 5-year-old and a 40-year-old in spirituality. That is how Swami's condition is. So it's understandable, yes. Therefore, when Swami speaks, it is so widely different and there are apparent contradictions. But the question was, how do I know what is it that I must follow? In a sense, when I'm in school, I know I'm in grade 3. But in spirituality, I don't know which grade I'm in. So, which is the message that I should follow?
You know, I've also thought of this many times. Because when Swami gives a discourse, as you said, there is bhakti yoga in it, there is jnana yoga in it, and there is sometimes emphasis on bhajan, sometimes emphasis is on Vedas,
on
sometimes
service.
It's on service. So what is it that you have to pick? And you know, from personal experience and from what I've observed from people, what is important is only the intention. You can pick any of those, and just what you have to invest in it is your Shraddha. And if you're doing the wrong thing, Swami will definitely come and correct you and make you do the right thing, what is right for you. But it's just that pick anything, just put your sincerity in your desire to please Swami in it, and I think the guidance will definitely come. It's a beaten track. Everybody has gone through it and you can be sure of that.
And I also feel if you further ask a question, okay, I can pick anything, but what is it that is best for me to pick? I feel that is where, you know, the inner guidance comes into being. It's very simple and evident for all to see. For example, you know, after a discourse, if you would go and ask somebody, what did Swami say in today's discourse? That person would say, you know, today Swami's emphasis was on love. And I realized how everything is just nothing but love. That is why we all are one. You know, today I understood what is the meaning of Advaita. You go to another person and ask, what did Swami say in today's discourse? He says, you know, yesterday itself I had a big fight with my wife or maybe with my friend. I realized how wrong I was. Swami is saying that you have to love your enemy, you have to love everyone. If I cannot love my own wife, if I cannot love my own friend, then what is this? I realized that I must be more loving to my family members. A third person will give another, a fourth person will give another. How is it that the same discourse, 3-4 people are finding different meanings? And I feel that is where the magic of inner guidance comes, that Swami is present in two ways. One is the Swami who is giving a discourse, the other is the Swami within. The Swami within picks out for us from Swami's discourse from without what we need. And that is why for one it's a lesson in Advaita, for the other it's a lesson in love, for a third it might be an inspiration to do bhajans. And I feel so, whatever inspires us in Swami's discourse is the message that is meant for us. We should grab it with both hands, start practicing it, and find fulfillment. Because as you rightly said, more than what we do, it is our intention and our effort that matters.
Just before we move forward, I'm reminded of a situation where Swami came and gave clearly instructions to two different groups and saying that this was for them and this is for you.
Okay.
One Swami gave a discourse in which Swami spoke about Namasankirtan and bhajans. And he said, you know, people lose the essence of bhajans thinking of raga and tala. The most important thing is bhava. And when you sing, that is the most important thing because that is the only thing the Lord picks from you. So don't bother about, you know, what Shruti it is, what this one it is.
The tune, the rhythm.
You know, the bhava is important. Think of the Lord, think of His attributes.
The feeling.
And with that feeling you should sing. And the entire discourse was on that, okay? And you can imagine how charged the atmosphere was. After that, Swami went into the bhajan hall, where the bhajan group was sitting, of all the students who sing bhajans every day. Swami went in and Swami stood there. The first statement he said was, whatever I spoke today was for the people outside, not for this group. And Swami very emphatically said, not for this group. And Swami went on to say very beautifully, Swami said, if you sing with raga and tala, they will have the bhava.
Wow.
And it was very clearly Swami saying, I think that is one of the advantages of having a physical manifestation of divinity. The ability to be guided physically. And that's the speciality of a master. That, you know, he can come and correct you, he can come and tell you what is right.
You know, I remember there is G.V. Prabhakar Rao, sir, in the university. He has been here for maybe 4 decades now, I think. And he has got the privilege of serving Swami. Once, you know, he was asked by the students, sir, do you believe that, you know, Swami is always with you, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent? He said, yes, absolutely. Every moment of my life, even today, you know, this was post-Mahasamadhi. So, they said, then sir, what is the speciality of the physical form? If Swami always was, is, and will forever will be, then what is so great about the physical form? Without batting an eyelid, you know, he just said, imagine you are writing an examination. When you are writing the examination, how wonderful it would be if your teacher himself is your invigilator too. And then, as you are writing down an answer, a tough question you are answering, you are unsure of the answer, you are unsteady, but you are writing it and you see that the invigilator is standing behind you, looking down at your paper. And as you finish the paper, you look and with a gentle movement of the eye, you know, he nods, saying that, that's good, you have answered it well. You know, the invigilator has not cheated, he has not given the answer, he has not done anything. But just that acknowledgement gives such a tremendous confidence, self-satisfaction, and that inspiration to go ahead and do extremely well. He says, that is what the Master's presence does in our lives. When an avatar comes, yes, I would have anywhere written that answer, but what I felt on writing that answer, that is possible only if the invigilator does that. You know, and it's not as if the invigilator is cheating. Absolutely. He has not given me the answer. So that is the speciality, and that is something that only the master's touch can do.
And you know, talking of this change of gear, you know, you're following something for some time and then a change happens. I'm reminded of one of our lecturers who shared this very important event which happened in his life. You know, ever since he became a student, Swami would very often tell them that, you know, concentrate on this form, meditate on this form, keep this form fixed in your mind. Whenever you do bhajans, whenever you do seva, keep me in your mind. And Swami would often say that, center your life around me. And he encouraged those boys to do things to please Swami, physically to be around Swami. And he was one of those teachers who got a lot of attention from Swami. And, you know, that was the driving force for whatever he did in his stay in the university. One fine day when he was just after he had completed his research, he was teaching in the university. One fine day, Swami calls him inside the interview room and he walks in. Swami enters, closes the door, latches it, and turns and starts the conversation with this statement. Swami says, how long are you going to run behind this form? And he said it really hit him, because he said, Swami, all this while you have encouraged us to do this. You know, you have encouraged us to keep this form as the center of all our activities. Now you are asking me this question. And Swami was very serious. He said, how long are you going to run behind this form? Swami said, it is time now to internalize yourself. And he said, you know, that was the last interview he got. And Swami drastically reduced physically interacting with him, and for a very good reason. But an important thing which he told us then was, you know, which I remember, he said, let Swami choose when that moment is. You know, don't jump the gun and say that,
I will renounce the form.
Yeah, even I will renounce the form and I'll go. And I think that's where again it comes to the point, the concept of effort, as you were saying. That put in your effort and your sincerity and your Shraddha in it, then the God will, you know, decide when it is time to change the course.
On a similar lines, again, this is very deeply embedded in my heart, something that Sailesh sir in school told us when we were making the transition between school and university. He said, you know, that there possibly are not those many lucrative courses in our university. You know, there is no engineering, there is no medicine, which are considered as the most profitable and wonderful careers to pursue. But he said, one thing that you have here is Swami. At that point, you know, he brought about this beautiful, balance, harmony that exists between what God has planned for us and what should our efforts be. He said, see, if God has decided that you, if Swami has decided that you should not be in His presence in His college, then try as hard as you might, you will not be able to be here. And he said, if Swami has decided that you have to be with Him over here, try as hard as you want to run away from here, you will be brought back. Everything will bring you back and keep you here. So being here is not yours, not your choice. Going out is also not your choice. But he said, no, while that is not your choice, what we can do is, we can say, Swami, whatever be your plan, my desire is I want to be with you. That is left to us, you know, that we can, that we have in our control. I desire to be with you, Swami. No, if you send me out, I'll be out. If you keep me in, I'm in. This is what he said, and I remember it had such a thumping impact on all of us when that interview and I was speaking about Swami asking us about anger. Asking Swami about anger. Swami, during that interview, at the beginning, first thing he asked was, how many doctors, how many engineers? He asked of the class. You know, first question he asked, how many doctors? Nobody raised their hand. You know, it was not as if there were nobody planning to be doctors. There were at least 5-6, and 4 or 5 of them are doctors today. But none of them raised their hands. And the reason was, they felt that, Swami, if we have to be doctors, we will be doctors. But we don't want to leave you and go and study medicine. Then Swami said, okay, how many engineers? Again, nobody. You know, this time it almost like, you know, the human drama that Swami does. Swami seemed surprised. He said, hey, anta gas. He said, all this is gas. You're acting. Nobody said. Swami said, very happy. You all will be with me always. And when Swami said that, you know, at least 15-20 members over there did not actually come back to pursue university education in the Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning.
Wow.
But they had actually elicited from Swami the promise that He will be with them throughout life. So that I feel is a beautiful thing about effort. You know, whether we might be destined to be or not to be, but nobody can stop us from putting in the efforts that we want to be with you, Swami. Because Swami, maybe that is the other speciality of a master. Unlike the world which judges us by the results that we produce, a master always judges us by the efforts that we have put in. The efforts matter more than the result.
You know, it's actually also explains one of the things which we commonly feel when we come to Swami, when we stay in the ashram. We are always judgmental, you know, we are looking at people and say that, see, this person has got so much proximity with Swami. This person has got so much from Swami and he is not changed. She has not changed. He is so rude and she is like this, and, you know, you are always judging. And I think it's a kind of ego we are putting in, saying that, you know, if I had got so much, I wouldn't be like this. You know, see, I've got so little and I'm like this. I think it's an expression of that. But we're always telling that, you know, so-and-so is X and so-and-so is like this and why are they this much? And I would often tell myself, but see, we as individuals, we always judge by what a person is.
Mm.
You know, what that person is right now. And in mathematics, you can say that the value of that person is, let's say, X. So we are always judging a person based on what is his value now. But what Swami always sees is delta X.
Delta referring to the change.
The change, which is like X1 minus X2 is delta X, something like that. So what Swami always will see in you is what were you before and how much have you changed yourself. How much you've changed might not be good enough for the others, but you've changed and that is important for me. Then you have taken whatever I've told you and you made that effort to change even a little bit. It is not good enough, but it's good enough for me.
Beautiful, Prem. And the other side of it also holds good, you know. Just today morning, somebody sent me an audio clip via WhatsApp. And I was just hearing it. I don't know, you know, I have responded to that person asking, can you give me the details of which discourse this was, which year? Because in that clip, you know, the other side of this Swami is speaking. One thing is, you might have come here just one day before. You know nothing about Swami. You're raw and absolutely raw in every sense. And yet, Swami is happy with you because he sees the delta X. But the other part where you might be here for donkey's years, for 40 years. Just by staying here for 40 years doesn't give you a halo. And you know, this was the spirit with which Swami was delivering that discourse. He said, I have seen people here. Please don't mistake me when I say this, Swami says. And he's telling in the discourse, people have stayed here 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And they think they are doing seva to Swami by serving in the canteen, by serving in the accommodation, serving in the bookshop, serving in the, you know, different, he names all these places in different trusts they are serving.
Okay.
And yet, they are not able to speak one word lovingly. If somebody comes and asks them, when is darshan timing? Hey, don't ask me. This is how they respond. And somebody else comes and says, what, when is darshan timings? This person feels that he's a high officer and he says, I don't have time for all this. Swami says, is this the way you deal? You know some information, in order to give that information, you think whether it's your duty or not. He says, forget duty. This much love, if you don't inculcate this much love, all your years here are a waste. Just imagine the Swami who has said that one darshan and your lifetimes are redeemed, that same Swami is also saying that if this much love you don't inculcate in your heart, then even if you have stayed here 40 years, all those years are a waste. It just, you know, hit me because it felt that one side is Swami's blessings, but the other side is the change that we bring in ourselves and the effort that we put in, which are important for Swami.
You know, that's the point I made right at the beginning, that balance. You know, Swami is unforgiving when he needs to be so. And at the same time, he is like so forgiving that he can forgive any mistake of yours. And this is typically Swami, you know, because there have been many, many discourses where Swami would call all the ashramites inside the bhajan hall and give them a real sound, you know, discourse like this. You say, what's the use of you being here? And people are coming here to learn and you are staying here. And a joke which we often tell, you know, amongst ourselves is, I don't know how suitable it is, but they say that, you have bath in water once a day, you're fresh. The fish that lives in the water stinks. It's like that. Swami would often say that, what is the point? You've been here, you're serving Swami, but you don't learn Swami's ways. You don't reflect Swami's love. And that's something very, very important. And at the same time, very, very forgiving and understanding like nobody can be. I remember one of my classmates, Swami gave him a lot of attention when he joined and Swami used to speak to him. He was academically a little weak. So Swami would always tell him, you study, put more time in your studies. And needless to say, his mind was not in studies. The first semester came and results came. He had failed in two subjects. Okay, and Swami was there in Vrindavan. Swami had called all of us for a try session. And this boy was sitting right in front. And he was absolutely frightened to show his face to Swami. You know, because he knows that the results have gone to Swami and Swami would have looked for this boy's results and found that he has failed. And he didn't know how to face Swami. He was sitting there and Swami came into that jula room. His head was down. And Swami looked at him and Swami was looking at him to look up. But this boy, his head was down and I think he was maybe crying also. And Swami said, called him by name and asked him to look up. And he looked up. And Swami so very sweetly said, just two subjects, no? You can clear in the supplementary.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can imagine how light he would have felt after that. You know, even if you're not used to a master like Swami, you know that how you have to face your parents when you've done badly in your exams. And when the father or the mother gives you an encouraging word and saying that no problem, you can always make up. You know, that confidence which that person places on you gives you such a boost. And that is what Swami did all the time. You know, when you're too low, he will raise you. When you think too much of yourself, and then the beating is definitely there to come.
You said about being too low and Swami raising you and examination marks. You know, I just can't help but recollect an incident that I got to know just day before yesterday.
Okay.
From a junior of mine in college. His name is Saptarshi Chatterjee. Mm-hmm. He's now in Calcutta, currently well settled, married and very happy in life. He was saying that when he completed his 12th grade in year 2000, he felt he was in shambles. He was just about average in studies and he never got excellent marks and all that, and he had this problem with academics.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that his father one day called him and said, look son, if you have to get into a good university, good institute, I don't know how you're going to do it because you don't have the marks which every university demands. And let me assure you that I don't have the money to pay donations and get you a donation seat. You know, this concept is there where if you give enough sufficient money, you don't need marks.
Call it management quota.
Management quota, yes. You know, where you can buy your seat. The reason why Swami cries out thumping is just saying that what has happened to education today? Instead of being temples of Goddess Saraswati, they have become temples of Goddess Lakshmi. Instead of, you know, concentrating on Vidya, which is educare, they are concentrating on money, which is not right. So, his father told him that I won't be able to do afford. And therefore, since you don't have marks, I think you should start looking out for a job. Look out for a job, get something, sustain yourself, and it's enough. You have studied till 12th grade. This hurt Saptarshi a lot and hurt him in the sense he felt how useless I am. And he every day, you know, would go. One thing is he tries his best to study hard. He's just not able to. It just doesn't seem to be getting into his upper compartment. But every evening he goes to a temple of Goddess Kali that is nearby his home, you know, and stands there shedding profuse tears. And he said that every time, you know, he used to cry this way, he would be in a kind of dilemma. Because he knew the story of Swami Vivekananda, which had, the episode that had occurred about 100 years before that, you know, where Swami Vivekananda too was in a similar situation, but that was because his father passed away. Mm-hmm. And the huge financial burden of the family with the loans and everything fell on his head. He had to get a job and earn money.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with Ramakrishna Paramahamsa and there was... Though a great spiritual treasure awaiting him, there was nothing financial there. So he goes and you know that story where he tells and Ramakrishna, you ask the mother to give me wealth, and Ramakrishna says, why don't you go and ask? And Naren goes in front of Goddess Kali, but when he stands in front of the mother, he's just unable to ask for worldly riches. He asks for devotion, for discrimination, for dedication, for detachment, but never asks for money. And he comes out after 3 unsuccessful attempts and tells his guru, Gurudev, how much ever I try, I am not able to ask the mother for money. And the guru says, you foolish one, how do you think that I can ask for money on your behalf? You know, but Ramakrishna Paramahamsa is happy that Narendra realized what is more important in life, not money and riches, but devotion, dedication and detachment. Now this story Saptarshi knew. And since he knew that, he says it was like an impediment because though I stand in front of the mother, I feel, you know, I should not ask actually. I should not ask for worldly benefits. But he said that, you know, I'm nowhere near Vivekananda. And the pressure was so much that I used to say, mother, you know, take me into your fold. Take me into your fold, but also give me, admission into a good institute. I want to study well. I want to continue my education. I don't want to flounder like this. And you know, I won't go into the details of that beautiful story of how he got to know about the Satsai Institute of Higher Learning. And when he got admitted here, within 2-3 years, he realized what a magnificent opportunity it was. First of all, it cost nothing. Absolutely free of cost for tertiary education, for university education.
Right.
And second thing, he realized that he is receiving a real higher education. he understood that both parts of his prayer to the mother, that Divine Mother, take me into your fold, but also give me a university degree. Both parts of the prayer were being answered with this one boon, because this was indeed a Satya Sai Institute of higher learning. That's what he realized. And then, you know, the thumping point, that God being the unseen hand behind everything, you know, Swami calls him for an interview. He was narrating this. It's maybe slightly off the topic, but it's so beautiful. He had this desire in his heart that I want to sing Ravindra Sangeet for Swami. Ravindra Sangeet, you know, is
Tagore's songs.
Ravindranath Tagore's songs, and they have a particular style of their own.
Right.
He wanted to sing this to Swami, and Swami directly asks him, taking the letter, do you want to sing it to me alone or here in front of everybody? He says, Swami, to you alone. Then Swami tells, come for interview. This is the first ever interview of his life, and he's so awestruck and dumbstruck seeing that. And he's just sitting. The first thing that Swami tells him, you know, just bowls him over. Swami says, every day you would keep crying. You would keep crying and tell that you wanted to be with me. That's why I have brought you here. He's just overwhelmed. But then, you know, the mind comes in, and it's, and Saptarshi asks Swami, he says, Swami, but when did I ask you this? You know, because till I got into the institute, he told this to Swami, you know, he said, forget knowing you, Swami, I had not even seen a photograph of yours. Then Swami told him, you think I don't know how in that corner temple near your home you would stand and cry? What, who you think she is? You think she is an idol? Swami said, she was moved by your plight. She came and told me to have pity on you. And that is why, listening to her, I have called you here. This, you know, Saptarshi said that it just bowled him off. You know, Swami is seeing everything. Swami knows everything. And for his comfort and convenience, Swami said that she came and told me.
Mm-hmm.
Means, you know, it is another way of showing that the prayer you do to any Lord reaches me. You know, after that Swami told him, you want to sing a song, right? Sing. He said that he was so overwhelmed and overcome, no words were coming out of his mouth. Then Swami gently picks up his right hand and keeps it on Swami's chest. Then Swami takes his right hand and keeps it on Saptarshi's chest. And Swami says, you know, this is the heart-to-heart connection we have. And if we are connected like this, song will automatically come. Now you sing. And Saptarshi said that he just began to sing. And the most beautiful thing was, Swami sang along with him. A Ravindra Sangeet, which he felt that there is no way Swami could have known this Bengali song. And in that a line comes, Madhura Prema, which means sweet love. Swami told him, see how sweet love is. And, you know, he was just bowled over. He realized that every little effort that he had put for God, for Mother Kali, for his goddess, every little effort had borne fruit. No effort had been futile, no effort had gone waste. And he realized how it is that he got an admission into a college when he did not deserve it academically. He realized that Swami did not look at what an achiever he was or how good academically he was. He just looked at the efforts that he had put and had bestowed on him the greatest blessing of his divine love.
No, it's so beautiful, and I cannot hold myself back by, you know, sharing another incident which I heard from one of our seniors.
Mm.
You know, he was a boy who was in the bhajan group, and one summer when Swami was going to Vrindavan, Swami told him that you stay back in Parthi. Okay, usually Swami would take him to Vrindavan, Kodaikanal, Uti, wherever Swami went.
Mm.
But that summer Swami told him, you stay back in Parthi. And Swami went away to Vrindavan. And being a bhajan singer, he had to sing bhajans morning and evening, Nagar Sankirtan. And as the summer was going, it got hotter and hotter and hotter. It became really hot. And he was getting news that Swami was in Kodaikanal, and Kodai climate is so pleasant. And Swami is in Vrindavan, and Vrindavan climate is so pleasant. So he was like, Swami, I am here in boiling heat, and I'm suffering all this, and you're happily, you know, in a hill station. Okay, and so he wrote a letter to Swami in which he scarcely concealed his anger and, you know, frustration. He said, Swami, why are you torturing me like this? You know, those are the very words he wrote to Swami. He said, it's so sweltering hot here, and, you know, you're happily having fun with the other students. And he wrote this letter and sent it to Swami. Swami was in Vrindavan. So 3 days later, promptly comes a call for him, saying that Swami is asking you to come to Vrindavan.
Hmm.
Okay.
So it worked.
So it worked. You never know till you really face, you know, you'll know whether this heat is hotter or that one is. So he goes to Swami and Swami calls him inside. And Swami is reading some letter very casually and Swami looks at him and Swami asks him, how is Puttaparthi? So this boy is in no mood for a sweet conversation and he said, it's fine, Swami. He said, is it hot? Next question from Swami, is it hot? This boy says, very hot. Oh, okay. And then the next statement Swami makes is, Nenu evarini torture cheyanora. I don't torture anybody. Swami told him, I don't torture anybody. So then this boy was quiet. He didn't know what to say. Then Swami told him something which is very, very profound and strong and which he recollects even till this day. Swami said, for whatever you've done for me, whatever little thing you've done for me, if you've done it out of your love for me and you've done it because I've told you to do it, Swami said, Yenchi Yenchi Istanu Neeku. He said, I'll count every bit of it and I'll repay it to you. I'll give it back to you. And you know, this was a statement which would hit him every time after he graduated, after he left, he was all around the world. Every time he would find that he was in a situation which nobody could pull him out of and he was pulled out of, you know, that statement came to his mind. He said, Swami said, Yenchi Yenchi Istanu. You know, some investments which would give him windfall gains, some business, you know, transactions which gave him amazing results. Every time he would go back to that statement, where Swami said, I will count every bit and give it back to you. And I think that's the thing with Swami. Because Swami says that everything which you do absolutely for God, you know, even you might not want anything in return, but God is not somebody who will not give it back to you in multifold.
You know, speaking of that word torture, I'm reminded of another incident. Briefly, I'll just recap it because there was, I think this was common among so many students who would write to Swami saying that maybe even devotees did that. Writing, Swami, why are you torturing me like this? One of the students who had written this, you know, Swami, holding that letter in the hand, stormed into the bhajan hall. He had not spoken to this boy for many, many days, weeks, maybe months.
Mm-hmm.
And now Swami is coming and saying, hey, you wrote this letter, right? Swami tells him. And, you know, he doesn't know whether to be happy or sad because Swami is actually now speaking. The ice seems to have broken, but not broken in the way he would have wanted it to break. He says, yes, Swami. Swami says, don't use words without knowing the meaning. So do you know what does torture mean? Swami told him, torture means when you trouble somebody and you derive joy out of that. Swami said, when you are in trouble and when you are sad, I am so much more sad. Know for sure that I derive no joy in putting you through trouble. Don't ever say that Swami tortures you. And then Swami walked back. You know, when I recollect him narrating this incident, I just feel, oh my God, what correct it is, right? I mean, when like a mother undergoes the pain of a child, though she doesn't have the actual pain, because if the child is crying, the mother's heart bleeds. How much more will Swami be feeling when we are put to pain because of so many reasons which is for our own good? And yet, how wrong it is on our part to think that Swami is a sadist, enjoying our pain and deriving pleasure from it. Swami always appreciates efforts and, as you rightly said, gives back. He'll count every little effort we have put in for him and return that in multiple measure.
But from our end, what I always used to think and I feel what the thing is, when you give for Swami, absolutely expect nothing from that. And I think that is when you actually give it to Swami.
Exactly. Otherwise, it's with strings attached.
Right, otherwise strings attached and it's an investment. But when you do for Swami, and that is why I know that the beautiful symbolism in doing a yajna, you offer it into fire. You don't offer it into water or you bury it under the earth.
From where you can retrieve.
Where you can retrieve it. The idea of throwing into fire is, I have nothing to do with it. I'm offering it completely to you. And that is what we do when we say that I'm doing this for Swami, which means, Swami, I don't accept recognition for this. I don't expect any remuneration for this. I don't even expect an acknowledgement from you. I think when we reach that state, that is the time when we are actually doing something for Swami.
And that is what reaps benefits.
Right.
But you know, that is such a subtle thing, you know, this selfishness. I remember there was a talk on selflessness and the beauty of selflessness and how selflessness is a reward in itself. By being selfless, everything in the universe gets conferred upon. At the end of the talk, you know, a person walks up to the speaker and asks the speaker and he says, listen, your talk was very inspiring. I am very thrilled and I feel that I should also develop selflessness. But you are sure, right? If I am developing selflessness, from tomorrow onwards I'll start seeing benefits. I mean, you know, it is such a paradoxical thing, it's such an ironical thing that you have heard a talk on selflessness and you decide to take up selflessness because it has got benefits. You know, it is like that. As you said, we are truly doing something for Swami when there are no strings attached. When we are not thinking that, ha, Swami has said that if we do for Swami, Swami will repay. So, I want this help, so let me do something for Swami. Then it becomes selfishness. And as Swami says, a fish is better than selfish.
And as Swami would often say, if you give your life in my control, leave it to me. Don't keep suggesting things to me. Let me do it my way.
Then you are not given it in my control.
I remember a small anecdote which one of the monks in the Ramakrishna mission was saying. That there was this sannyasi in the Ramakrishna order to whom a disciple came and he said, Swamiji, I want to give you a gift. So the monk said that I don't accept any gifts and I don't need anything, so I don't want it. And he said, no, Swamiji, please take this. I went to US and I found this walking stick and I wanted to gift it to you. And it was a very expensive one, very intricately carved walking stick. And this was an elderly monk, so he thought of him when he saw the thing. And he said, Swamiji, I've got it all the way from there. Please accept it. And finally the monk found there's no way he can refuse it. So he said, okay, give it to me. So the person handed over the walking stick. So he said, so now you've given it to me, right? He said, yes, Swamiji, I've given it to you. You accepted it. So now that I've accepted it, can I break it now? And immediately that man said, no, Swamiji, it's so expensive and I got it from this, very exclusive store and all that. And then that monk said, then you're not giving it to me. If you have given it to me, you will have nothing to do with what I do with it. You know, even if I were to break it or if I were to give it to another person, you will have nothing to do with it because you've given it to me. You have not given it to me. I think the most important thing...
You just want to feel that you're giving it
right,
to me.
From our end, from a disciple's end, a devotee's end, a student, devotee, whoever it is, from our end, I think what is important is to constantly keep reviewing what our acts are. And is it in line with what we claim it is? When we say, I've offered it to Swami, I've surrendered to Swami, I'm ready to listen to Swami. I think it's a constant process of going on reviewing, am I actually walking the talk?
Beautiful, Prem. You know, I just got lost for a moment because I remembered a recent interaction I had with my mother, it's such a thing, out of the salary that we get every month, a small part I give to my mother and tell, Mom, whatever you feel like buying for yourself, you do with this. And my mother, selfless that she is, every month I see that she uses it to buy something either for my sister or for my wife or for me or for my father. She just gets it and I feel, Mom, this is for you I'm giving. Why are you spending it on us? Don't worry, we don't want it. When you were saying this, it was just hitting me that, there also maybe, definitely I am wrong. If I really am giving that to my mother, then it's totally left to her to use it the way she feels. If she feels that the best way she wants to use it and be happy is to give it back to me, so be it then. I got lost in thought because what you said struck a chord and hit me. I'm giving it to her and mentally telling myself that it is hers, but all the while I want to be in control of it. I want to know how it is being spent, and it is being spent in a way that I think is beneficial for her,
right,
not what she thinks is best for her. A beautiful lesson which I will carry with me. And yes, that is what it is with Swami also. We feel that if we do this for Swami, this is what Swami must do. Which means we have not actually done it for Swami. We still want to be in control. A beautiful lesson on how we should put our efforts towards God. We will continue, dear listeners, with this absorbing discussion. So many more facets of the Master. We may not be able to cover it completely, but we will do our best. Hope you are enjoying this discussion. We'll be back in a few minutes after this short break. You two quickly take a break. Don't forget to tune in back with us. We'll be here to enjoy and thrill ourselves once again with the glories and stories of our dear Master.
Kali Avatara Sai Narayan. Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the middle of a very interesting afternoon satsang. As always, it's always interesting to talk about Swami. It's, you know, we can never find ourselves falling short of things to talk about Swami. You know, when we speak about the Master and how the Master treats us and how the Master judges us, we said that Master judges us based on the effort. And I think that is also an important message to all of us, that if we were to be the disciples of such a master, if we were to be students of such a master, we also should emulate the same kind of yardsticks which he has in judging us, right? You know, we will also have to look at people and judge them based on their sincerity and their effort and
their goodness,
and their intention rather than how things pan out, right? You know, I'm reminded of a couple of old students who spoke to us. And these are students who graduated from MBA from a university.
Alumni.
And you know, they went and, when they went into the corporate world, they found that most of the situations which arise in the form of, you know, rebellions from the trade unions or from the workers' unions, they all could be settled and handled if they were to treat those people like how Swami treated us.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one very interesting episode which one old student by name Vamshi, he was sharing. Mm. You know, when he went to and joined a company, promptly he was posted in one particular site which is known for the problems, you know, that unit was giving the company.
Mm.
Because they had a very, very rude lower management. They had a lot of problems with the workers in that factory. And usually the non-performers are those people whom you want to punish are sent to this unit.
Mm.
But for some reason, the people who recruited him had the kind of belief that he will go and will be able to set out, you know, set right things.
Mm.
So he put him there. And on the very first day, you know, one man storms into his office. So this person was the ex-union leader of the workers there. and he was known for creating problems with all the management. And whichever department they put him in, he's had a fight with the, you know, the superiors, and he's been thrown out. And he just walks into his department and he said, "I believe that you're the new manager."
Mm.
And he asks, "What work do you have for me?" So this person had absolutely no clue. He said, "Sir, can you just wait outside for some time? I'll speak to my, you know, the person from whom I'm taking charge, and then I'll get back to you."
Mm.
So he made him sit outside his room. So he called up the manager who was there before him, and he said, "Such and such a person is here. What work should I give him?" And the response he got was, "Don't do anything. Just send him back to the personnel department. You know, the personnel department. Have nothing to do with him. Mm. You're only inviting trouble if you're going to give him any work." And this boy was not ready to accept this. Because Swami would often say that there is nobody who is redundant and nobody who cannot be changed and nobody who cannot be worked with.
Hmm.
So that was the thing which was in the top of his mind. So he called up his PA and told him, "Get me the file of this person. Let me see his track record." So this man sitting outside, he sees that his file is going inside. So he starts boiling. You know, so this man is also going to judge me. And he's obviously not going to give me work. He's going to throw me out. So this person casually goes through the personal record and he's found that in every department he has worked in, he's had troubles. But he is a good worker in the true sense. You know, he has a very bad temper. He has a very bad way of dealing with people. But he was a good person, you know, who, if given a task, would do it well.
Mm.
So he went through the file and then he sends it off and calls this man in. So this man is just ready to burst. He's very, very upset. And before this student of ours can start talking, this man says that, "So you're not going to give me work. So you've gone through my track record, you know what I am, and you're not going to give me work." And he just started shouting. So the student walks up to him, gives him a glass of water, he just says, "Relax, sit down," and asks him, "Are you ready to work with me?"
Mm.
And this man is really surprised.
Mm.
He's saying, "You mean to say that you're going to give me your work in your team?" Mm. He said, "Yeah, I'm very looking forward to having you in my team." So this man's really surprised. And then he says, "Are you doing this even after listening to your superiors and reading my track record?" So he said, "Yeah, I read your track record. I can distinctly see that you have a temper problem. You have a, you know, you have problems with working with others. But I can also see that you're a person who puts your 100% into whatever you do.
Mm.
You never hesitated to go and tell somebody when they were doing wrong."
Mm.
And that was always a problem which, the thing which led to problem. So he said, "Will you be ready to work with me?"
Mm.
And this man was fuming and was ready to consume this person in front of him. And he said, "Sir, I'll do whatever you ask me to do."
Hmm.
And he walked away. And eventually, he ended up giving more and more responsibility to this person and, you know, made him such a good person, such a good asset to the whole company, just because he felt that, you know, I should not go by the exterior. I should not go by how people judge him. I should go by what I feel that he's capable of doing. And he says that he moved on, years passed, and he changed so many jobs. But even till today, every New Year, every Diwali, every Christmas, he would get a call from this person wishing him, "Sir, Happy New Year, Sir, Happy Christmas." And look, that is the a gene of Swami, which Swami puts in each one of us. And we have to look into ourselves and say that, have we carried that form of Swami with us? Because Swami says, "Love is my form." Have we carried that form?
When you say that, Prem, you know, I feel it's so beautiful, but probably it is slightly different. You know, it's not as if Swami puts a gene of himself in us. I feel it is more like Swami reveals to us who we truly are, how we should actually be.
Right.
See, so it is, we think that Swami is teaching us something. But again, you know, I feel that is where another beautiful distinction comes between a master and a normal human being, a normal person. A teacher teaches us things, but a master makes us unlearn things that we have wrongly learnt. So, it is not as if we are bad, we need to be taught good. Swami always believes that we are inherently good, but have forgotten how to be good. We just need to be rekindled. So, in that sense, I feel that what Swami does there, you know, by showing how he sees only efforts and not the results, and getting inspired by that when we also start doing the same, it is not as if Swami has taught us how we should be. It is Swami who has made us unlearn the stupid and wrong things that the world has put on us. So, you know, I feel so beautifully this incident brings us to another aspect of the master where he is different from an ordinary teacher, because an ordinary teacher teaches. You know, a sincere student is able to learn with a teacher. But with a master, a sincere student unlearns all the things that are not necessary.
Absolutely. I think because all of us come here, some of us were lucky to come a little early in age before we were forming our impressions and concepts.
Forming our baggage.
Right. In hard iron, at least we were a little supple in that sense that we could be guided. But most of us, you know, we come in with so many ideas which need to be unlearned before we learn what Swami is here to teach. A beautiful analogy which is often given is that of the Zen master. You know, a student goes up to the Zen master and he says, "Master, I want to learn the wisdom from you. I want to learn the true knowledge from you." So the master looks at the student and says, "Would you like to have some tea?" So the student is quite surprised and says, "Definitely, master.
Why not?
Why not?" So the master picks up a cup and starts pouring tea into the cup from a kettle. So he starts pouring and he finds that the student is seeing that the cup is full, but the master is still pouring the tea. To such an extent that the tea is pouring and pouring and pouring, the cup is full and it's overflowing. And the student looks at the master and says, "Have I come to the right place? You know, I thought I'm going to learn to be wise from this master, and he seems to be a little off himself." So he looks at the master and says, "Master, the cup is full." And the master says, "Yes, the cup is full." And then the master says, "How can I fill a cup which is already full?" And then tells the student, "You empty your cup and come to me, I'll fill it with wisdom."
Wow.
And I think that is exactly what Swami does to all of us. We come with our cups full, and almost most of us come to Swami so that he validates the knowledge which we already have. He kind of, agrees with the concepts which we've already created in our minds. But what Swami is telling us is, break all those concepts, remove all those things, and I will give you the true knowledge.
We come to Swami fully filled. He empties us and ensure that we are fulfilled.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's what Swami does. Because, you know, I remember in our MBA classes, we had this subject called VBM, value-based management.
Right.
In value-based management, we were taught something that was very, very interesting to note, you know. The teacher was telling us that if you notice a newborn baby, the child is so fascinated. You know, that the baby, the infant starts studying its own hands, studying its own feet, it's looking at its own body and it's lost in wonder. I mean, we never look at our own hands in wonder. We take it for granted, you know. And he was saying that it is at that point in time that the parents and the elders, they start, you know, in quotes, spoiling the child. Because they tell the child, "What is it that you're looking at your own hand? What is there in your hand? Why are you looking at your own self? That is you. That is you." You know, the child is born in all innocence, and that is why it is a representation of divinity on earth. You know, it is born with that divine thing that I am not the body. That's why even the body is an object for it which it studies. But then it undergoes a rigorous training where it is taught that this is you, this is your body. You know, the teacher was bringing this out so beautifully, and it was a different way of thinking. He was sitting here, we think that that child, you know, that baby doesn't have body consciousness. That's why it excretes in its own clothes. But he was saying, why do we tell it with disgust? We have to tell it with such loftiness, you know. It has no body consciousness. That's why it's excreting in its own clothes also. It has absolutely no body consciousness. It is we who feel that this body is me, and you know, that is why if this body excretes, it's shameful for me. It is not so shameful for me if some other body excretes. The baby doesn't have that because it is born pure. You know, as Mark Twain said, "I was born wise, education ruined me." A baby is born pure with that divinity, and we make it learn all the rubbish. And when we come to Swami with our own baggage of learning that we have got wrongly, he, as you said, he has to empty the cup. He has to make us unlearn all that so that we are ready to receive the wisdom.
You know, even as students, one of the things which Swami would often tell us is a good shift from what we've been taught all our school. And Swami says that education is for life and not for a living. Because all through, you know, even in your school, even when you're in KG, even when you're in middle school, you've always been told that if you don't study well, you'll not find a good job. If you don't find a good job, you cannot settle well in life. If not settle well in life, you know, you will be running from pillar to post to make
ends meet. You can't be happy, you can't be peaceful, you can't be fulfilled.
But you know, that's the first thing which Swami breaks. Even now, if you look up at the mission statement of the university, he says the degrees which are giving out, the diplomas and the PhDs which we give out, are only a namesake. What we have called you here for is completely different. You know, that's what Swami says in the mission statement. He's saying that you come here for a living, I'm not here to give you a living. It's just going to be incidental that you'll get a degree. And that is the first change in concept when people come to Swami, you get. You know, even otherwise, you come to Swami, the general thing is, you know, when you, the song which goes, Meli Chadhar, Odke. I mean, I've come with a dirty, soiled cloth, I have a dirty past, I'm a sinner. But first thing which Swami says is Prema Swaruplara, in the embodiments of love, embodiments of the Atman. First, stop looking at yourself in that wrong light. You're not that. And Swami says, the first thing is, I don't want you to associate yourself with something which you're not, which is impure. And you know, these are the small, small things, but the most striking things which Swami breaks us away from our regular thinking and the regular learning we have come to Swami with.
Exactly. And he has been doing this, you know, ever since his early childhood days. You know, we discussed about this when we were talking about Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Karnam Subhama, you know, that great lady, she has been considered as an equivalent to what Yashoda was to Lord Krishna. Karnam Subhama was to Satyanarayan Raju, our dear Swami. And she was an orthodox Brahmin lady. And in those days in India, orthodoxy was at its peak. She would not even, you know, visit or allow any other person of a lower caste to enter the living room of her house, forget going to their house or anything like that. And such a lady who was, you know, she was of Swami's mother's age. They say that usually all the learning happens up to 22. After that, after you're 22, it is tough for you to learn new things. It gets progressively tougher, and after your middle ages, it's almost impossible for you to learn anything. And the reason for that is because it's almost impossible for you to unlearn anything. But even to such a lady, if you see later on, Karnam Subhama, along with little Satya, with Swami, she visited the Harijan Wada, the area or the locality that has been specially marked out for all the lower caste people to stay. And this was something that was shocking to people in the village. They could not, as I said, they could not imagine a Harijan person stepping into Karnam Subhama's house, forget Karnam Subhama coming to their houses, cooking in their kitchen and dining along with Swami in their homes. But you know, that was something she did with great joy. She didn't do it with disgust. She didn't do it thinking that, oh God, this is something I have to do if I have to be with this Swami. She did it with great joy and thrill, and that is such an evident example to show how Swami makes you unlearn all the dogmas and fixed thoughts that you have, fixed ideas that we have about something. And when you change it also, it's not as if you're being cut away from something or something is being chopped away from you. You do it so gladly and joyfully because you know that you're only growing and gaining more by giving up that.
You know, you can imagine the confusion which Arjuna would have had. As Swami says, the essence of the entire Gita is Mama Dharma. You know, the first word and the last word put together, it is what is your duty, you should do your duty. And the last chapter starts with a verse which says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja. You know, that scripture which says that all that you have to do is stick to your dharma, concludes with the thought that give up all your idea of dharma and surrender to me.
And I will take care.
I think that is exactly what Swami is wanting us to do. That very path, that very practices, those very sadhanas which has brought us to Swami, Swami will tell that, no, drop all that and come forward. I'll take you to the next level. And that is that unlearning process which everybody will have to go. And because, you know, even though there is inconsistency where Swami says Mama Dharma and Sarva Dharma and Parityajya, the last chapter says that the true dharma of a disciple, the true dharma of a devotee, is to consider whatever he is commanded by the master as dharma. Like if it is told that you have to go absolutely in an oblique direction to what you've been guided to so far, you have to do it because it's a command of the master.
Looking at it in another way, you know, Mama Dharma, it is, Mama Dharma is actually Atma Dharma. And the Atma Dharma, we had discussed this in, while we had a discussion on the four values, Satya Dharma, Shanti, Prema. Atma Dharma is nothing but recognition of the truth that all are one. Everything is the same divine. So once that is recognized, I mean, every other dharma just becomes paradharma, which is an interpretation of dharma for that particular role that we are playing. We discussed it, you know, paradharma, we have a stri dharma, we have a purusha dharma, we have a brahmacharya dharma, we have grihastha dharma, we have dharma according to stages in life, according to age in life. All these are nothing but the atma dharma interpreted for that particular situation. So, none of these will ever hold greater worth or greater command than the original atma dharma from which they are all being drawn out from. And that is why it is said that all these are true. You know, the Bhagavad Gita is also a kind of a rule book based on God. So just as atma dharma rules over all the paradharmas, so too the Lord, the Master, rules over all the rule books. And therefore, giving up everything and listening to the Master is the ultimate, and listening to the Master will definitely involve unlearning all that we have learnt, because ultimately it is only what the Master says that matters.
And very true, and this is something which you will see in the life of so many great masters, mm-hmm. where they would come and absolutely challenge your reasoning. Because nevertheless, reasoning is something which has very strongly led us to Swami. You know, even if you look at us, you know, I've made a choice of being here with Swami, or somebody has made a choice of forever leaving their jobs. There are so many people in the ashram like that. They left their lucrative jobs, come and stayed here. It's all based on reasoning, because intellectually you've understood that this is more valuable than what you get outside. And if reasoning is such a strong thing in whatever decision we make, and Swami will ask us to do things which will challenge that reasoning, and that is where it is not, again, you know, what you do is not important. It is, are you ready to break your reasoning? Are you ready to unlearn what you've learned?
Yes,
that
you
ability
know,
to make
it. It boils down to the thing that we already discussed on, you know, the three zeros, the concept of zeros, where we say that Swami is the one that gives value to everything else, which are nothing but zeros. And I feel these are times when we have to check whether we really feel Swami is one and everything else is zero. Whether when it comes to reasoning, is Swami the one and reasoning the zero? When it comes to wealth, is Swami one and wealth is zero? When it comes to our health, is Swami is one and wealth, health is zero? We find that in such times when we have to unlearn things or go against our logic or go against our rationale, we are in the danger of committing a harakiri, you know, almost saying that Swami is zero, our logic is one. So, therefore, in order to give first priority to the Lord, absolute importance to Swami, and realize the truth that God is one, everything else is zero, I think it is necessary that we have to unlearn all that we have learnt, because we should be able to say that, Swami, I have been taught that this is the most important thing in life. But I say that you are the most important in my life. And so therefore, if you tell me that all that I think is the most important is rubbish, then it is rubbish, Swami, because you are most important. I think that is the ultimate test that differentiates a master from a teacher. And that is why we are forced to unlearn before we actually learn in a master's presence. You know, Prem, the time is almost, you know, we just have, I think, another 10 minutes left. So, dear listeners, as we said in the beginning, this is not a this is no way a comprehensive study or research on what a master is and what a master is not. But we are just enjoying this. And probably, Prem, we could bring out another point that differentiate a master touch from a normal human touch before we conclude.
Yeah, even as you brought that concept of three zeros and all that, I would like to insert another idea about the master, which I read somewhere and I felt it was so perfectly fitting Swami. A master has ruthless compassion.
Oh my God. Those two words don't seem to go together.
Right. They are absolute oxymoron there. You know, ruthless compassion in the sense, to rephrase that, the master does not care about what you think of him. If it is good for you, he will do it.
Wow. That is important. That is really, really important, because each one of us as humans are concerned, and we feel for our own self-image and how people perceive us. It is so important that we do things for the image, for brand building, what is it called in modern day terminology. And yeah, definitely if we look at Swami's life, he has done some things which seem to, in quotes, tarnish his image. but he doesn't care as long as it benefits the person concerned.
And always, you know, that is the only thing which will actually, the Swami has made this statement before, that is the only thing which will concern his decision making. If it is good for you, I will do it. You cry, you whine, you complain, you kind of, don't accept it, and you might even renounce me, but I will do it if it is good for you. That is something which I think anybody who has spent considerable time with Swami will know.
Exactly. And a master is able to do that, Swami is able to do that, because he sees himself in us. That is a speciality, a difference between a master and us, you know. We may love somebody, but we can never love somebody as much as we love ourselves. Because we don't see ourselves in others. But Swami does that. Swami sees himself in us. And because Swami sees himself in us, he always considers us as his equals, and he treats us the same way he would treat himself. You know, for example, Prem, when we are having this discussion, suppose you are bringing up an interesting point in the satsang, which I am not aware of, you can't help but feel a little superior to me, and you are, you know, sending a flow of knowledge towards me. The same happens when I too have a point which you are not aware of. I feel that, hey, you know what, let me tell this to Prem. Prem doesn't know this, and let me educate him on this. Invariably, this is what happens in the world. Whoever is transmitting the knowledge feels like the superior. Whoever is receiving the knowledge feels like the inferior. But this never happened in Swami's case. Swami always spoke to us as equals. Though visibly we are so different, visibly we can see that Swami is so high and we seem to be so low, but Swami never did it that way. I say we seem to be so low because I have complete faith in Swami's words that there is no difference between him and us. He would always address us the way he addressed himself. He would say that Swami, from the top of his hair till the tip of his toe, is pure love. And the next statement he would say is Prema Swarupulara, which means you too, from the top of your head to the tip of your toe, is pure love. And that is another distinguishing quality of a master, that he sees himself in us, and therefore he is able to see all of us as equals.
Really, you know, I can really relate to what you're saying, because very often somebody would come and say that, you know, I've had this problem in life, what does Swami say about it? And being in a place where we have read so much about what Swami has said and what Swami has told students and devotees during different interactions, we get into the mode of trying to become a philosopher. You know, we try to tell them that, you know what, this is how you should deal with the problem, Swami has said this, and you try quoting from other scriptures and all that. And invariably you feel like you're a philanthropist, you're doing charity, you're giving something to somebody, somebody is in need of something, and you are having plenty of it and you're giving it. Somehow that is the attitude with which we address it. But with Swami, it was always like, you know exactly what I'm trying to tell you. I'm just trying to remind you. You know, I can only think of this, like when we give advice, we're doing it like a philanthropist doing charity. But when Swami is doing it, he's doing it like somebody who's cleaning a mirror. Because he knows that, you know, what I'm trying to tell is already in there. I'm just trying to remove what is not part of that. And I will clean it till I can see myself completely in that. And that is how Swami addressed us, because that is how Swami spoke to us. And that is what Swami would often say, education is not important, educare is important.
Bringing out what is latent within. And that is why Swami never emphasized on making us learn things. He wanted to make us unlearn things, because as you gave the mirror example, it's not as if a silver coating has to be given so that we start reflecting him. It's just that the dust has to be cleaned away. Things have to be unlearned so that the reflection becomes clear. Beautiful. Well, dear listeners, the time for this satsang is almost up. We do really hope that you have enjoyed it as much as we have enjoyed talking about Swami, his stories, his glories, and the experiences of different people with Swami. As always, it's a great pleasure, and it's with hearts full of gratitude that Prem and myself offer this to Swami's lotus feet. We are so grateful to you, Swami, for giving us this opportunity where we can sit and experience you, talk about you, feel you, hear you, and share about you to the entire world. Really grateful for this opportunity, and we thank the Swami and all of you listeners for providing us with feedback and joining in this satsang, making it truly worthwhile thing, making us feel that our lives are indeed blessed, that we are able to do this. With this, we leave you with this song. Enjoy this break. After that, you will, on the other side of the song, you will meet Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
जगत के तुम हो दाता
अखिल जगत के तुम हो दाता
अखिल जगत के तुम हो दाता
अखिल जगत के तुम हो दाता
दीजो कृपा वरदान
दीजो कृपा वरदान
दीजो कृपा वरदान
दीजो कृपा के
बाबा तुम हमारे प्राण
बाबा तुम हमारे प्राण
अखिल जगत के तुम हो दाता
अखिल जगत के तुम हो दाता
दीजो कृपा वरदान
दीजो कृपा वरदान
बाबा तुम हमारे प्राण ईश्वर अल्लाह एक तुम ही हो
ईश्वर अल्लाह एक तुम ही हो
तुम हो वेद कुरान
तुम हो वेद कुरान
गुरु नानक की तुम गुरुवाणी मीरा के घनश्याम
मीरा के घनश्याम
मीरा के घनश्याम
मीरा के घनश्याम
बाबा Oh.